Hi, I'm John Weingart. I'm one of the neurosurgeons at Johns Hopkins.
And I'm Elizabeth Tracy, Director of Electronic Media for Johns Hopkins Medicine. John, thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure.
And we're talking about brain tumors.
We are. We're going to talk about brain tumors today and how they affect people and some of the different ways that we have to treat them.
Okay. So this is a pretty big topic, and I guess we could divide it one way, logically, at least in my mind, is in adult brain tumors and childhood brain tumors.
Right. The characteristics and how they affect people are different in both populations. And another way that we think about brain tumors really is slow-growing versus fast-growing tumors. We tend not to use the words benign and malignant as much as slow-growing and fast-growing. One can have a slow-growing lesion in a bad position, which can affect the person in a fairly profound way. So we try to avoid the words benign and malignant and think about slow-growing and fast-growing.
Okay, so since you've provided that distinction then, let's talk about those and different types of tumors that might fall into those categories.
Well, in the adult population and also a little bit in the pediatric population, there's a large sort of class or family of tumors that we call astrocytomas or gliomas. And they come in, again, the slow-growing or faster-growing version. There's also a middle grade, and they go by different names. Some people classify them as astrocytoma, which would be a grade 2 astrocytoma, or anaplastic astrocytoma, which is also sometimes called a grade 3. And then the last category would be a grade 4 tumor, or also called a glioblastoma.
Okay. So what about these different types? What exactly makes them different from each other?
Well, these are intrinsic tumors in the brain, which means that they start from a cell that normally lives in the brain, and they're infiltrative, so they mix with the brain. And the difference between the grade 2, the grade 3, and the grade 4 is their growth potential. And since a grade 4 has a much higher growth potential than a grade 2, the implications for the patient are much different, and the intensity of the therapy is also much different.
So when we talk about these different grades of tumors, are these just tumors that are captured at different points in their natural history? That is, a tumor that's a grade 2 may progress to a grade 4?
Yes, that's absolutely true. The grade 2 tends to be in a younger patient, so more typically in a patient younger than 40, although certainly people in their 40s or 50s could have a grade 2. The grade 3 and the grade 4 are kind of 40 and above, although again, there are instances of those higher grade lesions occurring in younger patients.
Okay, so astrocytomas then, isn't that a tumor that arises from a cell that's in the brain that sort of helps support the neurons?
That's right. It arises from the astrocyte or a glial cell, and that cell sort of gets out of control in terms of how it's growing, and so it normally is not a cell that's dividing and growing in the brain, and then something changes in it for some reason that we're not quite sure why, and then it starts to grow out of control in a way, and it begins to affect areas of the brain, and whichever area it's growing in, it will affect a different function for that person, and that's often how it might present or the first symptom that somebody might have.
Can you give me some examples of that, symptoms that people might have when they have a brain tumor?
Well, the most common symptom for the higher grade lesions would be headache. For the lower grade lesions, oftentimes they present with a seizure, or sometimes they present almost without symptoms. Somebody's been having some mild headaches that probably are not associated with the tumor, but they have an MRI scan, and the MRI scan picks up the abnormality. At times, people have had x-rays or CT scans after a minor car accident, and one of these lesions is picked up. So oftentimes, the lower grade lesions are much less symptomatic than the higher grade lesions. The higher grade lesions take up a lot of space. They cause swelling in the brain, and that produces pain and headaches. And then as the pressure builds, and then it may affect other functions such as strength, sensation, even how clearly one thinks or speaks.
Is it true that we're seeing more and more brain tumors, or is this really a result of more scanning that's taking place?
I think that certainly there's a lot more public awareness about people who have brain tumors. I think that the whole size of the population is growing. More people are living longer, and it is a disease that's more frequent in older age groups than in younger age groups. So given that, you would expect that there would be more present, but I think the incidence is really about the same as it's always been.
Well, that's comforting, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Indeed. So aren't there other populations of cells that give rise to tumors, too, besides astrocytes?
There are. There are other cells within the brain that can cause different types of tumors. There are cells that line the ventricles, which are the fluid spaces in the center of the brain, which can cause tumors called ependymomas. We also have choroid plexus, which is a material that makes the spinal fluid that your brain is bathed in. We can have tumors that form in that called choroid plexus tumors. There are also cells that sit in the membrane that surrounds the brain, which are called meningeal cells, and they can cause tumors that are called meningiomas. Now, those are tumors that are well encapsulated. They are not necessarily within the brain substance themselves. They act more by pushing in on the brain and causing symptoms, and certainly the outlook for that group of patients is much different than the outlook for the patients with the glioma-type tumor.
And finally, I guess we also have metastatic disease, that is tumors that arise elsewhere in the body but that actually go to the brain and cause tumors there, for example, melanoma.
Right. Metastatic tumors to the brain are probably more common than the astrocytomas or any brain tumor in terms of number. And that is because systemic cancer is much more prevalent than cancer in the brain. Not all tumors that metastasize to the brain need surgery, but they usually do need some therapy, and it depends on the type of tumor that has gone to the brain, how many numbers of tumors there are present, and how they're affecting the patient.
You've brought us very nicely then to this topic of therapy. So do you mind talking a little bit more about that?
No, that'd be great.
And how have things changed with respect to brain tumors?
Certainly for the glioma or astrocytoma type of tumor, there has been a lot of progress in how we're managing these patients. And certainly I think we're much more effective at maintaining people with a high quality of life for much longer periods of time. The survival curve has shifted in favor of the patient, although probably not as much as we'd like. There's been a focus more recently, or really over the last 10 to 15 years, on local therapies into the brain. One of the problems with getting treatment to the brain is that there's a barrier between the brain and the bloodstream. It's a barrier that naturally keeps harmful things out of the brain, as your brain is very important in terms of functioning and survival. And so it also keeps chemotherapy drugs or other drugs that you might want to give some tumor from getting into the area. At the NIH, they developed a technique called convection-enhanced delivery, which is where catheters are placed right into the middle of the tumor. This catheter can be used to drip things directly into the brain tumor. And there are a number of different clinical trials that have been completed and are ongoing looking at using this delivery strategy to put things directly in the brain. The next wave really in therapy is vaccines and immunotherapy, and combining that with chemotherapy. We have shown in our brain tumor lab that by combining some of these immunotherapy type treatments along with chemotherapy, you get a boost of the two. So the two together are better than one alone.
What about the gamma knife? We hear an awful lot about that. It seems to be advertised a lot in lots of papers.
The gamma knife is focused radiation, whereas standard radiation, which is the more usual type of radiation therapy given to astrocytomas or gliomas, is a very low dose of radiation that's given daily over 6 weeks. The gamma knife is a very high dose of radiation that's given usually once, but can be given over several fractions or several treatments. And it's focused so that the computer kind of focuses what part of the brain gets the radiation. It's most effective against metastases.
I think many people, including myself, may have the conception that when people undergo surgery for brain tumors, that it's inevitably an open craniotomy, that is, we have to open up their heads and move around inside their brains, and there's a lot of disability almost in the recovery period. Is that true?
I think that certainly with the imaging guidance technologies that have been developed over the years, in part by work done here at Hopkins, the neurosurgeon's ability to get into the brain and remove a lesion and get out without harming the patient is dramatic. And the majority of patients are out of the hospital in 2 to 3 days and are back to their normal function within a week to 2 weeks. There's very little pain associated with brain surgery, so the recovery time is short. We have an excellent ability to remove even intrinsic lesions up to 90 to 95%. The intrinsic lesions, like the astrocytomas, are infiltrative. And one of the analogies that I use for patients is there are some tumors that are like grape jelly and butter. And if you opened up some butter and found grape jelly in it, you could scoop that grape jelly out pretty easily without disturbing the butter. And there are some brain tumors that are just like that. Then there are other tumors, these intrinsic tumors, which are more like butter and margarine whipped together. And you know that if you had butter and margarine whipped together, it would be hard to separate the two. In those circumstances, we rely heavily on our image guidance, which is, in another simple way, GPS for brain surgery, because it allows us to navigate in the brain using the MRI scan interactively during the surgery. So we can touch somewhere in the brain, and it'll show us exactly where we are on the MRI scan. So on the preoperative MRI scans, we can can tell the patient or in the planning with ourselves, say, this is what we want to remove. And then using this image guidance, we can map out exactly in the brain during the surgery where we are to guide us in terms of making sure that we do the best thing for that patient on that day.
So it sounds like the use of these fairly sophisticated technologies is probably pretty important to getting the best outcome.
Oh, absolutely. I think that the imaging technology and the interaction with the surgeon during the surgery is very important in terms of doing the best for the patient. But treatment of these problems isn't just about surgery. It does involve other modalities, and the advances really involve combination of radiation and chemotherapy. Surgery alone cannot get rid of all of the tumor cells in this astrocytoma family. We rely on radiation and chemotherapy together to treat those cells that have mixed beyond the area where it's safe to remove, sort of the roots as people think about them. Over the last year and a half to 2 years, there have been advances combining chemotherapy with radiation together, and that has resulted in an extension in survival in terms of the higher grade tumors and also in terms of the percentage of survivors at 2 years.
For someone who's just been diagnosed with a brain tumor, what would be your advice? What should they do?
They certainly need to be seen by a neurosurgeon or a neurologist, but probably by a neurosurgeon, because the issue is always diagnosis. So usually people have a symptom, a headache, a seizure, or if it's not causing symptoms and they have an imaging study that shows there's an abnormality there, it creates a fair amount of anxiety, as you can imagine. And people want to get some resolution to that quick. Many times what we see on the scan turns out not to be consistent with a tumor. And oftentimes, if it appears as a grade 2 or a low-grade tumor, the management strategy is really just observation because the natural history of that tumor is so drawn out. But people would like information quickly, and I think seeing the neurosurgeon is a good idea because the issue of diagnosis usually would involve an operation. There are many circumstances where we do just follow these lesions. If the growth potential is very low, the lesion is in a very dangerous location in terms of function and quality of life for that person, then the best option might be just to watch this with regular MRI scans, even up to every 3 months, and wait until it really declares itself as going to affect this person and then intervene at that point.
Very good. Dr. Weingart, is there anything else you'd like to add?
I think that's great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.